ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ययाति नैशं हि कुलम् शब्दं सद्भिर्बहिष्कृतम् ऋतापानरथं शश्वत् सफर्यं कथमर्हति। ययाति cursed the dynasty of these Yadavas. And ever since then, they have been ostracized by honest men and addicted to liquor. How then does Krishna deserve to be worshipped? Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti gives the inner meaning of the words of Shishupal to show how he continued unintentionally glorifying Lord Krishna and his Yadu dynasty. Even though the Yadus were cursed by Yayati, they have been relieved, bahishkritam, of this curse by great saints. And consequently, they have been raised to a position of royal sovereignty by such persons as Kartavirya. Thus, they have become absorbed in Pana, protecting the earth. Considering all this, how does Krishna, the chief of the Yadus, deserve useless vrita worship? Rather, he deserves opulent worship. This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 74, The Deliverance of Shishupal, Text 36. It is said that whatever we see within the world, within other people, it is a mirror image of the particular state of our own consciousness. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, he said that a person finds fault with others only when they are honeycombed with faults themselves. This is, in a most graphic and exciting way, revealed in this particular story from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Yudhisthira is performing the most difficult, the most esteemed and glorified of all forms of yajna, the Rajasuya, that only the presiding emperor of the entire planet can perform. And he wasn't doing it for himself. He wasn't doing it for power, for fame, for prestige. He had a particular plan that at the very highlight of this, after the procedures have been successfully and perfectly completed, then one performs a worship ceremony of the most worshipable qualified person assembled. And because this sacrifice was such a prestigious and influential event for the whole world, all the greatest rishis, yogis, kings, princes, practically everyone was there. Yudhisthira Maharaj chose to worship Krishna during the Agra Puja. And that was his whole purpose. Like King Pratapa Rudra, he was the king of Orissa. But when it came to a great ceremony where the maximum people were going to be present, biggest crowd ever during the Ratha Yatra, millions of people, he took the role of a humble street sweeper because he wanted to show everyone Jagannath is king. Jagannath is great. I'm not great. I'm just grateful that I could be the servant of the servant of the servant who is really great. Let all honor and glory be to Lord Jagannath. In a similar way, during this incredible experience of this event, when so many exalted persons were present, Yudhisthira Maharaj wanted to reveal what was in his heart. I'm the servant of the servant of Krishna. And the greatest blessing I have is to inspire people to recognize Krishna, to take shelter of Krishna. So that was his heart. And when it was come to choose the person, his younger brother, Sahadev, was like the voice that spoke what was in Yudhisthira Maharaja's heart. And he praised Krishna. Yudhisthira performed the ceremony with such intimate, genuine love and devotion. He washed Krishna's feet. He gave him a throne to sit upon. He sprinkled that water on his head and on all his relatives and ministers. He drank it. He did pujas and chanted so many beautiful, had Brahmins chanting mantras. It was wonderful. And almost everyone there was in ecstatic happiness. Nothing. It was the culmination to see Krishna glorified in such a way. So while Yudhisthira Maharaj had tears of love in his eyes, on the other side of the room, Shishupal had blazing coals of anger and envy in his eyes. It was intolerable. It was unbearable for him to see Krishna honored in this way, because he wanted that honor for himself. It is said that if you water the root of the tree, the water goes to every part of the tree. If you offer your love to Krishna, then your love goes to every living being and everything, because everything is growing from the root of Krishna, the source of everything that exists. Janmadyashayada. But similarly, if we are envious of Krishna, then we are potentially envious of everyone and everything. And how does that envy manifest? Through this ahankar, we want to enjoy, we want to be the controller. Although Krishna is the supreme control, we want to be the proprietor. Krishna is the supreme proprietor, and we want to be the enjoyer of God's property. Whether it's through other people or through other things, this tendency to immorally, without a spiritual foundation, to enjoy the things of this world, to possess the things of this world, is an expression whose root cause is that we're not happy acknowledging that it's meant for Krishna. And that's why great sages and rishis and yogis and enlightened Vaishnavas especially, when they see someone attached to power and prestige and money and all these things for their own selfish interests, however great they become in the eyes of the world, through their skills, through their talents, if they're doing it in a spirit of service, devotees really are so happy because they see that they're making progress. But if they're doing it in a selfish spirit, then while in Kali Yuga, most of the rest of the world honors them and glorifies them as being great, a devotee sees it as pathetic. It's just a very, very elegant, complicated expression of envy of God. They don't want to ask favors from such a person. They pray for such a person. They're willing to give their lives to help such a person out of his pathetic, poverty-stricken condition spiritually. And from reading Srimad Bhagavatam, when we have Satsang Association of True Devotees, this is actually how we should start learning to see the world, through the eyes of truth, not through the eyes of illusion. Shishupal was so envious of Krishna. And because he was envious of Krishna, he was actually envious potentially of anyone who got in the way of his own selfish, egoistic desires. So he was also very envious of Yudhisthira. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it is explained in one of the previous purports, he tells how Shishupal, at the very time when Sahadev proposed Krishna's name for the Agra Puja, Shishupal could have spoken everything he was going to speak, but he restrained the tendency for a very evil reason. Because he knew if he presented it then, there would be a debate, and whoever won the debate, then the ceremony would continue. But now, the ceremony's done. Yudhisthira Maharaj already did the Agra Puja. So now Shishupal's speaking, because that means from his words, according to his own intention, the entire yajna, the sacrifice from beginning of end, would have been doomed, cursed, and fail. It's done, it was done wrong, its every benefit is negated, and the curse of the offense that you've all committed is upon you. That was his commitment. His strategically planned intention. So here it is, at the very culmination, when everything is just concluded. And from his mouth, what was in his mind came pouring out. He sees nothing but negativity in Krishna. He's heard of and he's seen Krishna perform the powers that only God could perform, but he's not willing to see it. There's a saying, you see but you don't see. You hear but you don't hear. That's the condition. Avajananti mamuda manu simtanamashita. Krishna tells in Gita that foolish people, even if they hear the glories of the Lord, or even if they see them, they just can't see them. They take them to be something ordinary. Hiranyakashipu, he saw Nrsingadev right before his eyes, the absolute supreme form of power and fear. Fearfulness personified. Enormous. The roar was completely disorienting Hiranyakashipu. He knew he was Vishnu. But still, he hated him and thought, I will kill him. He's my enemy. And little Prahlad is seeing the same Nrsingadev, and with tears of ecstatic love, he's praising Nrsingadev. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was at Singhachalam, near Vishakhapatnam, visiting the very famous Nrsingha temple, he offered a prayer from the scriptures. He said, just like a mother lion to her little cub lion, little baby, she's the most tender, gentle, sweet, protective mother. But to anyone who tries to harm that little baby, she is death personified. She's ferocious. Same lion. It's not that she takes a different form. She's the same person. But according to how you approach her, she's going to be seen by you in a very different way. Prabhupada uses the example of a cat. For the kitten, the cat, when the kitten is in the mother's mouth, being held up by the mother's teeth in her mouth, the kitten is most safe and happy. She's just feeling, there's nowhere in the creation that that kitten feels more pleased and protected than when she's in her mother's mouth. Being carried. Nothing can harm me. But when a rat is in the same mouth, being held up by the same teeth, the rat sees the cat as death personified. The most fearful experience, the most dreaded experience possible. Same mouth, same teeth, same cat. It's different perspectives according to how we approach, according to how we identify ourselves. So while the Pandavas and the Rishis and the sages and the yogis and the sadhus are in the happiest point of their life seeing Krishna being honored and hearing his glories, Shishupal is at the most miserable, frustrated state in his entire life. And in order to completely sabotage Yudhisthira Maharaj's intentions, and to once and for all make like the final siddhanta of all knowledge that Krishna's a rascal, Krishna's bad, Krishna's useless, this was the time where he could really, with an incredible exclamation point, declare it and prove it to the world. There was no time better than this. So he put his heart and soul into it. And he wasn't just speaking like an actor on stage. He was thinking like this. And what he's saying about Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam only tells a few things. He's talking. The statement of the Vedas that time is the unavoidable controller of all has indeed been proven true, since the intelligence of wise elders has now become diverted by the words of a mere boy. Speaking of Sahadev, who actually nominated Krishna in this way. And he's talking about how incredibly exalted so many members of this assembly were. Narada Muni was there, Veda Vyas was there, Vasishta, Vishwamitra, so many Bhishma, so many amazing persons. How does this cowherd boy, the disgrace of his family, deserve your worship any more than a crow deserves to eat the sacred Purodas rice cake? Krishna is very expert. When he does something, everything is included. Every single thing he does, everything's included. It's inconceivable. Shishupal is Krishna's cousin. And he's born in royalty. Because Kunti Devi and Vasudev were brother and sister. And Vasudev is the father of Krishna. And he's a royal Kshatriya prince. Surasena is his father. He was a king. They're royalty. And in those days, it's not like today where royalty is just kind of like a rubber stamp that we just, for sentimental reasons, we remember the way things must have been in the old days. Royalty had great power. They had militaries, they had armies, they had vast provinces that they ruled over, they taxed, they had wealth. They were kings. So Shishupal was a cousin. He was a royal prince. Father was Dhammaghosha, who was a king. So he was brought up in that environment, being trained as a warrior, being trained as a statesman, being trained in the finest schools with the finest teachers, with the finest of everything. Incredible prestige. And here's Krishna, while Shishupal and others in these royal dynasties are, you know, getting the highest possible education and training. During the whole time, Krishna's a cowherd boy. And everybody's hearing his stories. He's playing with calves, and he's playing with cows, and he's dancing and playing with his friends. This is not the way royalty lives. Even when the Brahmins, and when they were performing their yajna, in Yajnastali and Vrindavan, you know, they were very high-class Brahmins. So Krishna sent his little friends, please, I know that you're all hungry. You have expressed. So go to the Brahmins and ask them for some food. It's a very auspicious time. And when the little cowherd boys went to ask the Brahmins, please give us food in the name of Krishna and Balaram. They're hungry, they're close by, and so are we. And it's really a good time. You'll get really good blessings if you give some food now. But they completely ignored them. They're Brahmins. They're doing really high things. They're chanting mantras and tantras and yantras and mudras and pudras. And these are just cowherd boys. Insignificant little children taking care of animals. They didn't even acknowledge them. So similarly, this great royalty, and here's Krishna, he grows up in a little farm herding cows. Now, Kshatriyas, when they may protect the cowherd people, you know, because they're under their care. But to accept somebody who just does that, just in the dirt all day, and, you know, these people are decorating themselves with jewels and fine robes, and Krishna and his little friends are decorating themselves with bushes and wild leaves and flowers. Huh? And while they're like competitive to prove that they're the champions, they hear about Krishna, how he wrestles with other little cowherd boys and he's defeated. So from their perspective, coming from that background really makes Krishna inferior. Because, you know, they're proud of all their training. And sometimes sophisticated people, they really become disturbed when an unsophisticated person does something better than what they're supposed to do. If somebody sophisticated like them does something better, they don't like it. But if somebody unsophisticated, if a scholar is defeated by another scholar, then, you know, I don't like that. But if he's defeated by somebody who really doesn't have any education at all, just a simple person, that's really humiliating. That destroys their ego. It doesn't destroy it. Rather, it feeds it and inflames it. So this is what Shishupal is saying in this verse. Krishna's, who is this Krishna? We are royal, coming from lineages representing the greatest kings throughout history of the solar dynasty and the lunar dynasty. And Krishna spends his whole childhood and, you know, teenage years practically just isolated in this village herding cows. And Shishupal is saying he is the disgrace of his entire family. He's a disgrace to us. He's not carrying on our tradition or our mood or our spirit. He's a gopa. So what we see is the sweetest part of Krishna, he sees as the greatest fault in Krishna. And here he's giving, when there's a sacred offering to God, that should be given to the Lord in the form of the yajna, he's comparing Krishna to a crow that comes to steal it. And he's talking about how he doesn't follow any of the principles of social or spiritual orders or family ethics, who has been excluded from all religious duties, who behaves whimsically, who has no good qualities. How does such a person deserve to be worshipped? I'm sorry for speaking these things so enthusiastically. It's heartbreaking. And we come to today's verse. Yayati cursed the dynasty of these Yadavas. And ever since then, they have been ostracized by honest men. What is glorious, he's seeing as a terrible defect. We read the story, I believe it's the 9th canto, of Maharaj Yayati. He was a king, and I'm not going to go through the whole story because it's quite esoteric. But he was a king, and he made a serious mistake due to somehow or other falling prey to uncontrolled mind and senses. And Shukracharya, who was a very powerful Brahmin, he cursed him. And Yayati was at the prime of his youth. And he had such unbelievable facility to enjoy his youth. He was a king. He was cursed with invalidity to become a really old, crippled man. And suddenly it happened. Now here he is. One minute he's young and he's enjoying, and the next minute he's like hundreds of years old. That's what happened to his body, his mind, his body, hardly walk, hardly do anything. And he didn't like that. So he wanted to exchange with one of his sons their youth for his old age. And he had several sons. And the eldest was Yadu. So he approached Yadu and said, "You give me your youth and I will enjoy like anything. And I will give you my old age and you will suffer. Until I enjoy so much I decide to get renounced, then I'll give you your youth back." Which may never happen. He didn't say that, but we know that. So Yadu said no. Why did he say no? Because Yadu was a very, very enlightened, intelligent, and pure-hearted person. And ultimately, he understood that in youth, old age, in whatever situation, how can I best serve Krishna? And however we could both best serve Krishna in an honest and genuine way is how we could best serve everyone. Watering the root of the tree. So he understood that Krishna was to take birth in his dynasty. And if he got invalidity and everything, he couldn't have children. So it would contradict Krishna's desire. It would be an impediment, or at least a serious delay, in bringing the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the world. Similarly, Vasudeva and Devaki, they're in an underground dungeon, chained by Kamsa. Every time they have a child, it's murdered viciously. Why did they keep having children? It was a difficult situation for them. They were Yadus, because they knew that Krishna was going to be their eighth child. The Supreme Lord Vishnu was going to appear as their eighth child. So they were willing to undergo the difficulties to facilitate their service to Krishna, to help Krishna's plan. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya chaduskratam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami yuge yuge. The Supreme Lord descends into this world out of compassion for all beings to reestablish true Sanatana Dharma, to protect the innocent, and to remove the cancerous miscreants. That's the Lord's mission, to give compassion. So Vasudeva was willing, and Devaki, to undergo whatever difficulties to serve that mission. And similarly was Yadu. Because you see, it is a dharma to follow, especially in those days. It was recognized, especially in those days. doesn't mean it's not Dharma now. It's just not recognized as much, but it was really recognized in those days. Dharma was to follow what your father tells you to do. Follow what your mother tells you to do. And Yayati was telling Yadu, take my invalidity and decrepit old age and give me your youth to enjoy. Now it's his dharma to do that. And it's described several of the other sons also refused. And they violated dharma by refusing their father. But Yadu, the essence of Bhagavad Gita applies to him. Sarva dharman purityajya mam ikam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshaye shami masaja. Krishna tells, abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. Sharanagati. Yadu was doing it in a spirit of surrender to the will of Krishna. And Kunti Devi, in her prayers to Lord Krishna, she, with all her realizations from where she's sitting as the royal queen of the world, Hastinapur, the mother queen, the mother of the king, in when she was in that era of her life, where she had that authority, she offered a prayer that, Krishna, Yadu is so dear to you. Our great forefather, Maharaj Yadu, is so dear to you. Such a great devotee. He would have gladly done it for his father. He refused in a spirit of renunciation for the higher purpose of serving Krishna. So Kunti Devi is glorifying Yadu. And the whole world, one of Krishna's names is Yadu Nandan, the son of the Yadu dynasty. There are so many names of Krishna glorified even today, 5,000 years after he was physically here in this world, describing him as a child of the Yadu dynasty, Yadubara, Yadunath. But Shishupal sing it in a completely different way. What we're glorifying as the highest religious principle of complete surrender, he's seeing Yadu as being totally irreligious. Whereas the whole world is seeing Yadu is so infinitely blessed that the original Supreme Personality of Godhead has chosen to be his descendant. Shishupal sees it as a curse. We see through the lens of our own minds. Shishupal had such envy. And when we have envy, we see envy where there's not even envy. When we're filled with faults, we see faults even if there's no faults. Shishupal could speak for hours, for days, for weeks, for months, for years, if he had the opportunity, just describing the nasty, horrible qualities of Krishna. And he could practically do it without even repeating what he already said. Because he was actually brilliant. And he meant it. Because that's the way he was saying things. What was he was saying? He was just seeing the mirror image of his own mind. And a Vaishnav is just the opposite. Srila Prabhupada, quoting from the previous acharyas, he sometimes explains Vaishnavism in such a simple way. He says, to be a Vaishnav simply means to not have envy. Sounds simple. But when we've been conditioned and cultivating and exposed to envy for so many lifetimes, it's easier said than done. And there are many examples. When King Prataparudra was getting the blessings of Lord Chaitanya, the devotees were watching. Lord Chaitanya was embracing him. Lord Chaitanya was weeping tears of affection on his body. Lord Chaitanya was showing King Prataparudra his divine opulences as Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And everyone else was just outside the garden watching. And if there was any tinge of envy in people's hearts, they would have been thinking, why is he doing all that for him? Why not me? He's living in a big palace. I'm a brahmachari living on the ashram. Why is he getting all this credit? Why not me? I'm such a scholar. He's not like that. What about me? They were all happy. They were all in total ananda, ecstasy, to see King Prataparudra getting such mercy. And that's the symptom of a devotee. A devotee finds the greatest happiness to see someone else get blessings, to see someone else be empowered, to see someone else getting the favor of the Lord. And to the degree we're not happy seeing that, to that degree we're envious. Means we're not actually a Vaishnav. We may be in official categorical recognition, but real Vaishnavism is a state of heart. Vrindavan Das Thakur writes in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat that the highest position in all of creation, beyond elevation to heavenly worlds, beyond perfection and attainment of all the eight yoga siddhis, beyond liberation from all suffering and from birth and death forever, beyond all of that, is to have the name Das, to actually be a servant of the Lord. Now, some of us have been given the name Das, but it's not just a name. It's supposed to be our consciousness. And this is what it means. When Vrindavan Das Thakur says it's the highest position to be Das, to be servant, he's not saying that we just put it on our name. It means we live by that. That means we're not envious. We really serve. To serve means to please. To please mean we take happiness in the good fortune of those who we are serving. And when we're das anu das, servant of the servant of the servant, we want to see everyone have good fortune. It's not that I want you to have all good fortune, but as long as it's a little less than me. That comparative spirit doesn't enter into the picture. We automatically become full of all good fortune when we wish others good fortune. And when we don't wish others good fortune, we are actually truly bereft of all true good fortune. This is spiritual psychology. When Sanatana Goswami was being glorified by Lord Chaitanya, everyone was just so happy. And there again, it says, because they had no envy. They were really well-wishers. And that is what a Vaishnava is. That is a devotee. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his own life, he gave an example of Sri Ramchandrapuri. Ramchandrapuri was a disciple of Lord Chaitanya's Param Guru, or a godbrother of Lord Chaitanya's Guru. He was actually very, very renounced and very learned. But somehow or other, he really displeased Madhavendrapuri, his guru, when Madhavendrapuri was on his deathbed. Madhavendrapuri was in the highest ecstasies of ecstatic love. He was in the mood of being an eternal, intimate, loving servant of Sri Radha in her separation from Krishna. And it's described that the prayer of separation was so intimate and so deep and so elevated that only three people in all existence can ever understand it in full. Srimati Radharani, Lord Chaitanya, who's Krishna in the mood of Sri Radharani, and Madhavendrapuri. What is his exalted position? But in that separation, he's expressing such humility. And sometimes people can see humility as a weakness and really make mistakes. So Ramchandrapuri said to his guru, if you're not seeing Krishna, oh, because he went to Mathura, if you're not seeing Krishna and you're crying like this, then just meditate on Brahman. Giving such advice to the most exalted Paramhamsa. And Madhavendrapuri was not pleased with him. He didn't curse him, because great souls don't have to curse you. All they have to do is be displeased with you. And then Krishna curses you. Madhavendrapuri just said, get out away from me. I don't want to see your face. I'm about to die. I'm crying to be with Krishna, and you're telling me to meditate on Brahman? Get out. So he displeased his guru. Yasya prasada bhagavat prasada. And what happened? Very, very instructive. The worst thing that could possibly happen to anyone. If he got leprosy and he suffered and died, that would have been a small thing. But he got something much worse. He lost his taste for true bhakti. And when he lost his taste for true bhakti, what was his taste? To find faults in other people. And why do people find faults in other people? Unless you're really compassionate, like a medical physician pointing out a disease so you could cure it. You know, sometimes great souls would criticize, but they're not doing it to push a person down. They're doing it to pull people up. They're pointing out a disease so that people could be careful not to get the disease, or so that people will take the medicine. But if we don't have that genuine, true, well-wishing spirit, then we're simply finding fault. Most dangerous thing. and he became addicted. That was his joy in life, to find faults with others. It describes in Puri, he would invite Lord Chaitanya's associates for prasad, and he would feed them, and he would want to give them more, and they would say, no, it's too much. And he'd say, no, please eat more. And they'd say, no, I'm not going to eat more. Please, a little more. Toda, a little more. No. Oh, you must not like what I cooked. No, I like it. You must not like it, otherwise you'll eat more. Okay, I'll eat more. And then after they eat it, just see how much of a rogue you are, overeating. You call yourself a Vaishnav, you call yourself a sadhu, and you just go place to place just overeating and eating, and you're so attached to eating and eating, eating. Condemned are these devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And they would look like, what just happened? Just trying to please him. And he was so obsessed with finding faults in others that he couldn't resist finding faults in Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya is a sannyasi. One time he came in when Lord Chaitanya was eating and he saw some nice preparations. He started screaming right in front of Lord Chaitanya, "You are a hypocrite! You are a pretender! You're so so-called renunciate, and you're eating so many fine foods and so much fine foods." Devotees were really upset. It's kind of like Shishupal at this meeting. But Krishna, when Shishupal was speaking, these things, we're going to get to that later. Please remind me. But it was a similar situation. Well, we'll get to it now. They couldn't tolerate. He was going on and on and on, and the Pandavas and various other soldiers, they lifted their weapons to stop Shishupal from speaking these things. It was unbearable. And Shishupal, that's exactly what he wanted them to do. He took his sword and he took his shield and he was ready to attack them, attack Yudhisthira, attack all of them. He invoked them. He wanted them to have this reaction so he could fight, because he knew he would win. And in the meanwhile, there would be blood all over the place. And when there's blood in a sacrificial arena, it's all condemned, cursed, and failed. That's what he wanted, a bloodbath right in the yajna. That was his envy. So Krishna saw they were about to come to him, and he was ready to fight, and he charged at them. And Krishna told everybody, don't do anything. So all the devotees, great heroes, they didn't like doing this, but they followed Krishna. They just sat patiently. But Krishna saw Shishupal's going to attack them. There's going to be blood everywhere. So Krishna had to save the day. He just took his disc, his Sudarshan Chakra, cut off Shishupal's head. But it was so precision, such a precision surgery. The head fell here, the body fell here, and there was not a single particle of blood that came out of his body. So the yajna, it was completely pure. It was unbelievable. Only Krishna could do that. It was a completely pure surgical operation. And the most amazing thing was not that. As everybody was seeing what just happened, incredible, this effulgent light, the light of Shishupal's soul, emerged from his body and lit up the world, and then entered into Krishna's body. Which means Krishna gave him supreme liberation. First he gave him mukti, liberation into the Brahmajyot, the Brahman. And then from that liberated state, Krishna gave Shishupal eternal residence as his loving service in Vaikuntha, in the spiritual world. To someone who hated Krishna so bad, Krishna gave the highest liberation. Because he was always remembering Krishna. But back to today's verse. He's speaking so bad. And Maharaj and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he told all the devotees, no, even though he's criticizing me, and not only did Ramchandra Puri criticize Lord Chaitanya directly to his face, but he was going all over the, everywhere he went, he was spreading the nastiest rumors against Lord Chaitanya and all the devotees. Everywhere he was going, to sadhus, to politicians, to regular people, wherever he went. Just see. Because Lord Chaitanya is such a hypocrite, all his devotees are hypocrites. And because he had such an exalted position as a sannyasi and everything, it was very, very difficult. And Lord Chaitanya told his devotees, no, no, don't say anything. Don't do anything. He said, actually, he's my well-wisher because I am eating too much. So he's actually protecting me like a father. So don't say anything. And then Lord Chaitanya, he said, from this day on, I will only eat a small fraction of what I usually was eating, and I'll only take some rice and steamed vegetables, something like that. And the devotees who used to love to invite Lord Chaitanya to their house, prasad, and cook with such love and devotion, now they're seeing Lord Chaitanya eating so little and so simple, it's breaking their hearts. And Lord Chaitanya was never found fault in Ramchandra Puri. He would bow down to Ramchandra Puri when he would come. He would offer him all respects. He didn't say false. And I'll end with the beautiful story of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, one of the six Goswamis, son of Tapan Mishra. When Lord Chaitanya came to Varanasi after becoming a sannyasi, he stayed with Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar. And at that time, Raghunath Bhatta was just a little boy. And he would just clean up after Lord Chaitanya would have prasad. And he would do the most menial, simple chores, just cleaning, bringing things for him. Sometimes he was allowed to massage Lord Chaitanya's feet. But he developed such a deep attachment and love for the Lord and for the devotees. When he became a young man, with his father and mother's permission, he went to Puri, and there he lived with Lord Chaitanya and would sometimes cook for him. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was a super excellent. He could prepare the most wonderful prasad, make the boga, offer it to the Lord. And Lord Chaitanya and the devotees loved his cooking because it was done with so much devotion, with such a deep will to please the Lord and the devotees. And he also loved to recite Srimad Bhagavatam and chant the holy names. He stayed with Lord Chaitanya for 8 months. At the end of those 8 months, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with him. He gave him his own neck beads. Lord Chaitanya took off the Kanti Mala from his own neck and wrapped it around Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's neck and told him, you should go home to Varanasi because your parents are old and they're really great people. They're very great devotees of the Lord. They are so dear to me. Go home and personally take care of them as long as they live. And remain a brahmachari. Do not marry. And under the guidance of a pure Vaishnav devotee, study Srimad Bhagavatam and chant the holy names. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami went home and he studied Bhagavatam and he served his parents for another 4 years until with the name of Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on their lips, they departed from the world. At that time, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, he was about 28 years old. He returned to Puri under Lord Chaitanya's guidance. And there he cooked for Lord Chaitanya. And he would recite Srimad Bhagavatam for Lord Chaitanya. And all the devotees loved him. After 8 months of doing service for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Chaitanya told him that you should go to Vrindavan under the care of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. There, you should always chant Krishna's holy names and always read and recite the Srimad Bhagavatam. Very soon, Krishna will show his great mercy upon you. Then Lord Chaitanya took some prasad that was given to him, a 10-foot tulsi garland that was worn by Lord Jagannath. And Lord Chaitanya himself wore it. He gave that to Raghunath Bhatta. And some special honored chewing spices that was the mahaprasad of Jagannath. He gave that. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami cried. He knew physically he'll never see Lord Chaitanya again. He's going to Vrindavan. And he went. And there in the company of Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, he would cook for them. And they were very happy. Everyone was happy in his association. He was always chanting Krishna's names. And how much pleasure he would give to the other Goswamis and all the Brijabasis who were assembled when he would recite Srimad Bhagavatam. Each sloka, each verse, with the sweetness of the voice of a cuckoo, kokila, he would chant each verse in 3 or 4 different melodies or ragas. So sweet. He would relish each verse. He would go, when he would be chanting slokas of Krishna's beauty and sweetness, he would go into such a trance. He would hold on to the neck beads that Lord Chaitanya gave him. He would put the tulsi garland that he preserved around his neck, and he would hold the chewing spices to his head and to his heart, and he would cry in ecstasy. In this way, he became so dear to everyone in Vrindavan. And he took shelter of Rupa Goswami's deity, Govinda Dev. And he had a special flute made for Govinda and special earrings that were shaped like shard. And one of his disciples, one of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's disciples, Maharaj Man Singh, of Amber, he ordered him to build the temple for Govindaji. So the Radha Govinda temple that we see in Sri Vrindavan Dham was actually built, organized in the service of Rupa Goswami by Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami. And when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and the other acharyas describe Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's qualities, they emphasize this principle. Why is it that he had such a taste to constantly chant the names of Krishna and relish the sweetness of Srimad Bhagavatam? According to our surrender, Krishna reveals himself to us. Some scholars study Srimad Bhagavatam and they just think it's some sort of mythology. Others just think it's an academic study and they get a PhD. But they don't even believe it. Others want to believe it. Raghunath Bhat Goswami, he was tasting the bhakti ras. He was tasting the sweetness of the highest ecstatic love in every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. And when he chanted with that kokila voice, three or four tunes for each verse, it was coming from the very soul of his heart. How did he have such a taste? Param drishvani vartate. Because he had no taste whatsoever for gossip. Any kind of mundane gossip, he just didn't want to hear it. It was a total waste of his time. If you don't have a taste for Krishna, then you have to have a taste for something. So usually people really do like gossip. There's so many newspapers and magazines, it's just gossip and internet. I'm not good with statistics, but it's probably at least 95% gossip. Even if they're sites for Vaishnavism. In Mayapur, there was a very primitive way of communication that they were, I don't remember what it was called, but they wanted to get it for all the temples in the world could communicate with each other, and they had all the plans made, and they told Srila Prabhupada, and he said, no, you will simply gossip. So that was like a prophecy of the internet age. And what is gossip? Gossip means we like to see the problems in other people and talk about them, whether they're there or not. But it describes Raghunath Bhat Goswami, he would never, ever find any fault with a devotee. And Haridas Pandit, he was a dosa darshi like Raghunath Bhat Goswami. He was the chief priest of the Govinda temple. He would never find fault with devotees. Raghunath Bhat Goswami, the fact that he's serving Krishna is good. Even if there was a fault, he didn't want to put his attention there. Unless it was really to help a person. He would only see their good qualities. And Srila Prabhupada writes here, quoting Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, that in this world everyone has faults, and everyone has good qualities. And the difference between a true devotee and one who's not is a true devotee is always focusing on those good qualities. And unless he absolutely has to help that person, he doesn't talk about the faults, he doesn't think about the faults. That's how Srila Prabhupada started our society. He came to places where people had so many faults. And he would, if he could find one spark of good quality in them, he would just focus on that and fan it and bring it out. If you look at the faults of other people, usually just magnify those faults and bring out more faults. if our actual intention is to bring the potential good out in people, then even if we correct them, it's for that purpose, to bring out the good, because we see the good, we see the potential, we appreciate that potential. And that's actually the quality of a person who's not envious. Because envy is very clever. Maya is very clever. Lord Chaitanya said, when you're trying to water the seed of devotion with our spiritual practice, especially hearing and chanting, then weeds grow along with it. And those weeds, if you're not really careful and sincere, you will think that that weed is the devotional creeper. And you'll water it, and that will strangle the group devotional creeper. So an envious person will generally not say, I'm envious. A person who's finding faults with others like this, they will find so many justifications. Because that's the nature of envy. The nature of envy is it's the most crooked thing of all the weapons of Maya. It's really crooked. I'm saintly, but we act like this. So Vaishnav means no envy. Rupa Goswami tells that a Vaishnav who's actually developing bhakti has no propensity, has no inclination to find faults with others. Why? Because they're so happy seeing the good qualities in Krishna and seeing that Krishna's good qualities in others. And in this way, Kirtaniya Sadahari, Trinara Bisuniche Naturori Basi Hishnana Amani Namana Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant and forgiving like a tree, to be really eager and happy to give all respect to others, to not expect it in return, any respect. That means essentially to be without envy, to really be in a true mood of service. Only in that state can you really taste the sweetness of the holy name. And in this way, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami was constantly chanting the holy names. Now that we have, of course, Shishupal is really like a guru to us because he's teaching us how what not to be. He's actually revealing to us what we all have in our own hearts, unless we're paramhamsas. And he's helping us to see when we have this envy, when we have this unnecessary, unholistic, fault-finding tendency with these desires to justify it all, then we should see, Shishupal's living in me. This is Shishupal. Do I want to be Yudhisthira or Shishupal? Do I want to be Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's follower or Shishupal's follower? Let's take vote. How many want to be Shishupal's follower? Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's follower. So that means every moment, every day, you make that choice who you're going to follow. When you want to give in to your envious fault-finding tendencies, to not be a well-wisher of others, then you are actually following the dictations of Shishupal. And like him, you think you're really good. But if we're sincere, when those tendencies come, we choose to be like Raghunath Bhat Goswami. We can't just stop seeing faults in others. We have to negate the negative with the positive. Tani Saravani Samyamya Yukta Asita Matpara. Bhagavad Gita tells we should restrain the mind and senses from the negative things, but we should fix ourselves on the positive of Krishna. So we say no to that, but in order to have the strength to sustain that saying no, we have to say yes to speaking the beautiful glories of the stories and the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam Chaitanya Charitamrita to the lives of the saints, the Bhagavad Gita, and the chanting of the holy name. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.